Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. We are also very happy to have back once again on the program the man we like to call our chef in residence. The man is Doyle Moore, and let me hasten to add something, ladies and gentlemen. It's a purely honorary title, but the honor was conferred on him a long time ago, and he's been good enough to come and stop by here every month. We've been doing this for a long time on the first Wednesday. And generally, the show works like this. There is a theme that he comes up with. It's divine inspiration or something. It alights on him like a cherub from heaven. And he says, okay, this is what I'm thinking about. This is what I would like to talk about. And then we do that. And sometimes people call and they tell us stories about, you know, this. It may be a particular dish. It may be some kind of ingredient. It may be some kind of approach to food. And then people call in and say, oh, yes, in my family, this is what we did. Or sometimes people call in and say, well, I have a good recipe for you. Here it is. Let me tell you about it. And we always have a good time. So this time around, he's been thinking about pie. Now, this gets kind of complicated. So I can get him to explain it in a moment. It gets kind of complicated. But he was starting to think about, well, you know, so supposing that you wanted to make a pie and you really didn't have access to good fruit, think about the time when fruit was much more seasonal. So you couldn't, it wasn't accessible just any old time. So, or maybe you just didn't have a lot to work with, but you said, all right, I'm going to make a pie. Well, what did you do? And people indeed had recipes for that. So that's kind of the idea here, and I guess we could extend that to say, well, we're talking about fruitless pies, and believe me, there are many times when I think that that's the story of my life, fruitless. But we'll try not to be morose, ladies and gentlemen. Fruitless pies, that's the thing this morning. So questions, comments, recipes, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Okay, so I do this every time when we start. I ask this question. So, what got you thinking about making a pie without fruit?
Well, the truth of the matter was, I ran into a recipe on Food Channel, and I was curious about it because I recognized what I thought the recipe's source was, but they kind of had dolled it up. Being Food Channel and all, it was called. I think it's. Called, oh, I've got it here somewhere. Called Impossible Pie, and the impossibility is the fact that you can't make a mistake. You dump these things into the blender, you zip them up, and they're done, and that's it. And you can't make a mistake. And not only that, it doesn't even take a crust. You just pour it into a pie shell that you've greased. And it's all cooked as a kind of a custard. I'll call it a kind of a custard. Really isn't a proper made custard. And I thought it was kind of curious, and it made me thinking about the fact about, well, here we are right at the start of May, and there's nothing you could cook. There's nothing readily available in a natural form. Yeah, you can go buy some apples that have been sitting somewhere since last September. And yes, they're fine and that's it. But that's about it. You know, you can get some apples and some pears that aren't ripe yet and no peaches available, plums aren't there, all kinds of things aren't really there to just make a nice pie. And I thought, well, what did folks do when they were confronted with gotta have something sweet to end the meal? And I come to find out there were a lot of answers, and most of the answers were aimed at you take what you got in the house and you make something out of it. And one of the recipes I found had a little note at the bottom that says the way you used to cook was you cooked with what you had. Now you had to have too much stuff and you can't cook with it anymore. I mean, it was really a folksy twist on all of this information. Mm-hmm. But I knew that the spirit and the idea of it rang true. And I found then recipes for Kentucky milk pie, sometimes called poor man's pie. Why is it poor man? Well, you got some syrup, you got some flour, you got some milk and an egg, put it together and bake it. Yeah. It's a pie. You may be a poor man, but you've got a pie. And that pleased me very much because I found a large number of those. And one of the biggest sources of a pie like that is called a sugar pie. And we use that term as an endearing term, you know, sugar pie. Well, there is such a thing. In fact, there are two of them. And both of them are very important in Indiana. Hmm. In for two reasons. It's rural, and Mennonites are very big with sugar pie, and especially the brown sugar pie from Indiana. And there's quite a community in the northern part of Indiana, so it's very rampant. Thus says, what was her name? Adams?
Marsha
was a source of a lot of recipes of this sort of thing. Yeah. And it was just a matter of, well, what do you put together when you don't have anything to put together? Well, you put this together and you got a pie. And in fact, the one pie I'll find, all I did was copy recipes out of Marsha and other sources. But one of the pies, you don't even mix. You don't mix it up. You have a pie crust, and you put some sugar and some flour and some cinnamon and some stuff in it, and you mix it around with your fingers.
Even at that is, you don't put it in a bowl.
You just put it into the
crust and sort of mess it around.
Yeah. And then when it comes time to pour the milk and the eggs over it, you just pour it over it, and you don't touch it anymore. You don't mix it or stir it up or do anything. You just pour that over, and that's it. And the pie takes care of itself and becomes a pie.
Huh. Well, you know, this guy, I started thinking about my dad's family. He grew up in Kentucky, in Henderson, which is in the sort of in the northwestern corner of the state. It's actually not that far from the Kentucky-Indiana border. Mm. And they had this pie that, and you know, the first time, I think maybe, and the only time I ever encountered it, I know it was there, and it was something that they really liked, chess pie.
Oh, chess pie, yes.
Which to me, I guess the only way I would describe it was it's kind of like pecan pie, but there's
without
no pecans.
You're absolutely right in both the description and its form. In fact, the chess pie, I think, came before the pecan pie because pecan pie is not as old as you think that it is, although it has become very, very traditional and there are very specific ways. And most of that pie came after the invention of Karo syrup.
Mm.
Karo syrup became the catalyst that made a pecan pie happen. But it was a chess pie before that, which I think it's the use of syrup rather than sugar. And syrup and eggs and milk and flour go together. And to make a proper chess pie, you want 1 or 2 tablespoons of cornmeal.
Huh.
And that's why in some chess pies, depending on where you go, it's just a little grainy, has a slight grainy taste to it. Not taste, but mouthfeel. And I know in Tennessee, they make one with cornmeal.
Mm-hmm.
And that took me a long time to chase down the chess pie because it's very popular.
Yeah.
And it's, you're absolutely right.
And this, just to show you, it's interesting, you know, how you get into regional variations of things. So I was talking about this with Martha Deal, one of our producers, and she came up with a recipe that came from her aunt or her aunt, depending on how you like to do that, for a lemon chess pie. So essentially it's a chess pie, but it's got lemon juice in it. And she said she thought maybe this was something that was a Florida invention, because I think maybe that's where this aunt had come from. At least it, she said it was an old recipe from her family. And it does, in fact, have sugar, flour, eggs, butter, milk. It has a little bit of cornmeal in it. And then it has some lemon juice and some lemon rind. And so it sounds to me like maybe it's a chess pie and with the addition of the lemon.
The extra bit of lemon. Extra bit of lemon. Well, which is very, very possible because the key lime pie is very much like it, except it takes chemistry in another direction.
Yeah.
And it's a flavor that is very Floridian.
So that's what I'm thinking. Well, yeah, maybe that was another one of those cases where people took a basic recipe and then they had something else that was a thing that they had, which was citrus. Mm-hmm. And said, well, okay, let's put some of this in there and see how it goes. And they did it and said, well, we like that. So then it became a recipe. Yeah. And it probably became just a thing that basically people there had because they could go out and they could pluck a lemon off the tree or they had access to citrus.
There was a time, however, when lemons were very expensive, hard to get, and not readily available, mm-hmm. really. And so that's where the vinegar pie came from, which, I mean, see, all this stuff stitches together.
Yeah.
The vinegar pie, brown sugar pie, milk pie, what are some other common, and as I say, poor man's pie. Other common names like that, but it kind of all stitches together, and it's all around the fact of what do I do to give this taste or to give that, yeah. And so vinegar pie is a very popular pie. It's known mostly in the South. There are folks that have cooked at other places, but mostly vinegar pie is in the South, and in fact, I didn't find any recipes that made any real reference to northern cooking, and I'm not certain why. I mean, you're just as poor in the north as you are in the south when you haven't got it. You're set up exactly in the same way.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing that I was thinking, that I was wondering if you were just kind of also thinking about the kind of things that people did in the Depression, or maybe just people.
Depression, yes.
People who didn't have a lot of resources, and so, you know, they did with what they had, and they wanted to have a little bit of a sweet, so they used they put together the simplest kind of ingredients, something to get it to set up, something to make it sweet.
Yes.
And pretty much and put it into a crust, and that was it.
Now, here's another thing. I don't know if you know this history of pie making, but pie making, as you know it, is American.
Really?
Yep. Now, there were things that were made, but in England, where most of the influence came from, it was never a two-crust pie. It's a pudding basin, mm-hmm. thus the name, mm-hmm. and the stuff goes into it, and a pie crust lays on top of it.
Oh, there's no bottom.
There's no bottom crust, and so that form, and it was much thicker. So that's where much like cobblers and such things came from, that kind of cooking mannerism and making of a pie in two shells, which then is another confusion. I haven't found out why it took that name, because that name comes from but pies that were baked with two crusts were called coffins.
Well, I guess I could see, you know, I could see the image, I suppose.
There weren't too many two crust pies made until American mm-hmm. pie, and most of the American pies were even though the English puddings and such things, the pies that we eat now are mostly German and Dutch in their origin, and that may have had something to do with the making mm-hmm. of the two crusts and such. But I mean, now you make, you know, make one and two crust pies, and you don't think anything about it. Well, there was a time when there wasn't a bottom crust to the pie.
Questions, comments, recipes, what have you. This is our monthly show on cooking with this guy that we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore, and he's been stopping by here once a month for a long time on the first Wednesday and picking something to talk about, something food-related, and then kicking that around and talking a little bit about food experiences we have had, and, of course, sharing recipes. And his thought, again, this time around was, well, maybe we could do something about pie. But he was very interested in – and he's – as he has explained, I think he's thinking about the time when that there were more seasons and things were only available certain times of the year, and that at this point in the year – there wasn't a whole lot of fruit available to make pies with. So if you were going to make a pie, you know, what would you use? And so he has come up with a number of recipes, some of which we've sort of talked about here, that are pies, but they don't have any fruit in them. Questions, comments, recipes, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We'll talk first with somebody over in Belgium, over by Danville, line number four. Hello.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what's the difference between pie and cobbler? Is there that much? I don't see that there's that much difference.
Well, yes, there is. A cobbler doesn't have a bottom crust. Now we get into that long thing about a grunt and a slump and a cobbler and but essentially, a cobblestone highway or a cobblestone path is made up of rocks that are piled side by side as big chunks.
Okay.
And so when you make a cobbler in its sense is generally a biscuit dough that you simply drop the biscuit dough on top of the fruit mixture that you've put inside of a rather deep, not too deep a casserole, but it
right.
could be a casserole. But
yeah.
it's just plopped on top like cobblestones, and so a cobbler mm-hmm. has that particular sense. Now there are grunts, a blueberry grunt. I don't like the story that I get from that because they say, oh, it has to do with the fact that it bubbles and makes noises while it's cooking. Mine never did. It just ended up being something with a crust on the top. You rolled out a crust and flopped a crust on top of it. Now, I do find it amusing that American cooks very carefully trim that crust so it sits down perfectly on top of the of it,
but yeah.
and the English take a crust and make it lop over the side of the bowl.
Huh.
And but where they all come from is just something. It can be different kinds of dough. Some of them are kind of like a bread dough or a biscuit dough, a quick bread dough. Some of them are like a pie crust, and the French even take puff pastry and lay puff pastry, just lay it on top of whatever it is. I don't know what that one is necessarily called, but that is your basic difference. It doesn't have a crust on the bottom and it's not done in a pie tin.
Right.
So other than that, you come and
which came first?
Probably the cobbler, because that's the older form of European cooking,
okay.
of that sort
yeah,
of thing.
That makes sense.
So it and it was America that put things into two crusts.
Okay.
And I never am quite certain why that was done, because there was no precedent for it. It just happened and a long time ago. But again, I think it was Dutch and German that had that influence more than the English or the French or the Italians.
Okay.
So that's it.
All right. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thanks. And was there? I mean, we do also have savory dishes that are like this.
Oh yes.
Too.
Oh yes. And they were also called pies in England.
I guess though it seems that to me maybe it depends on where you live, that here in the United States that somehow didn't catch on, or we don't have as many of those things. It doesn't seem to be quite so common. Yeah, we have pot pies and we have shepherd's pie and stuff like that. But it seems like the savory ones we don't do as much as various kinds of sweet things with that kind of treatment.
Well, you're right, but you forgot one of our earliest programs where I had those three meat pies.
Well, how could I have forgotten? It's probably only been 27 years.
Oh, no, it's been 30.
Oh, okay. Well, 5 years among friends, why quibble?
But you are right, because it was the making of it in that manner that I think took the name, got the name pie hooked to it. There are meat pies and savory pies, and I still cook them. They're a favorite picnic thing for me because when the pie is done, it's done. You can carry it with you. It's good, and they're generally good a little bit cold or warm temperature.
Yeah. Now, are we talking about pasties?
No, because
we have talked about
we've talked about those pasties. Those are encased. That's another show. Yes, where the bread is encased, and so we have empanadas, and we have pasties, and we have
calzones. Is sort of
yes,
like the same
exactly.
deal.
Nearly everyone has a folded over a recipe for, and they're either baked or they can be like pierogies. They can be boiled. And you can roast them after you've boiled them and all kinds of – but nearly everyone has that sort of a thing where there's a pastry and a filling. And the filling then is a matter of – in fact, the original pasty, I think, was an entire meal. You had vegetables in the front. It was a thing made in the shape of a shoe. And, of course, the reason it was is you ended up with just a hunk of the bread that you were hanging on to because you were in the lead mines and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You didn't want to eat everything. You were eating with your fingers, and so you munched through the front of it. But often near the end would be fruit would be put in there, so you'd be eating away and you'd have maybe some kind of meat and rutabagas and potatoes and maybe carrots. And then all of a sudden you might have some peaches lying in the end.
Yeah, a little bit of a sweet.
That was
your dessert.
And then you threw away the crust that your dirty hands were touching, which is why it is in that funny shape.
It's ingenious.
Yes, it is. And it was the Cornish women that thought all of that up in the tin mines. Hmm. But they were in the tin mines, but it was in the lead mines that story came more because of lead poisoning and such things.
All right. Well, we're about midway through here. We got some other folks to talk with. Let's do that. Champagne, line one. Hello.
Hello. I can't vouch for the truth of this, but you probably know it anyway, but do you know the origin of the name Chess Pie?
Chess pie? No, I don't. I don't know.
The story I heard, this was when I was a little boy, was that, mother or somebody would make it and everybody would say, what kind of pie is this? And she'd say, it's chess pie.
Now when you've told me, I do remember exactly that. And that was, and that's exactly the whole point of this show. Well, there's nothing special about it. It's just pie.
One more thing, and I'll hang up. Something my mother, I don't have a recipe for it. I'm sure they're easy to find. But one thing that my mother made that when I was a kid that I liked very much that fits the theme of the show is butterscotch pie.
Oh, yes.
Which it has meringue on top.
Yes.
And then the bottom part is the kind of butterscotch custard.
And butterscotch pie is very special. I mean, you have to boil the water and the sugar at the very beginning and get it brown for a real butterscotch pie.
Yeah, it's awful good, at least as I remember it. Anyway.
It is good. Thank you.
I'm enjoying the show. Bye-bye.
Me too.
Thanks for the call. Well, now that's very interesting because Martha Dia, one of our producers, went to the font of all knowledge, as I like to call it, Wikipedia, and there indeed was an article there about chess pie, and it has this suggestion that it's chess pie.
It's chess pie.
And also, apparently, some people think, maybe this seems to me kind of a stretch, that the word comes from the fact that there would have been a day when you baked your pie and then you put it in a pie safe, or apparently sometimes that piece of furniture was called a pie chest. They think chess pie was called that because it was in the pie, coming out of the pie chest. Now, that doesn't work for me, but I like the other one better.
I do too. And pie chests were regional. They weren't national.
Oh, okay.
They were regional. In fact, they were so regional that in the Deep South, they put the chest, the four legs of the chest into pans of water so that insects wouldn't climb up and climb into the, and that is one of the reasons why you can hardly find a pie chest that doesn't have bum legs on
it. Oh, yeah. Because
they rotted.
Because they rotted
away in the water.
They absorbed the water from, yeah, right.
So, oh, that's interesting. And they were really a way of keeping the pies, but they had to have air, and so that's why they're pierced tin are on the side.
Uh-huh.
And at one time, I had a pie chest that you actually hang from the ceiling. You didn't have too many bugs getting.
So
into
the bugs it. Keep that with another
yeah,
way.
That
keeping
was another
the bugs
way.
Out.
Yeah, it was a pretty rare one. But it its four legs went up, and you tied it with a rope to the ceiling. So all those things happen. They're a part of this story. I love it.
Well, let's talk with some other folks.
Yes.
Let's see. Next, we'll talk with someone in Woodford County, Line 2. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Enjoying the show.
Thank you.
I'm a pie eater, not a pie baker.
Well.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yes.
And just wanted to remind you, in Illinois, it's rhubarb pie season.
It is. In making my pronunciamento that there was nothing that we could do, I did have to admit that rhubarb is available right now. And are you German by chance?
Yep.
Pie-stingel.
Never heard of that.
Pie plant.
That's what they call rhubarb.
Yeah, that's rhubarb. That's the German name for rhubarb, which comes to mean pie plant or something. And my dad called rhubarb pie plant a lot.
Oh yeah, and I love rhubarb pie.
I do too. And I refuse to eat a rhubarb strawberry pie. That's sinful. It must be only rhubarb.
I love them both.
Now you make me. I have to tell this story because rhubarb pies are not the easiest things to get, and a lot of places just simply won't bake them, and you have to go to somebody that does do the baking. And I have two favorite pies in my life, and they're both influences of my father. I love gooseberry pie, and I love rhubarb pie. And I was going through Missouri one trip, and I stopped and stayed at a place for the night, and they had a restaurant next to it. And I had a very nice home-cooked rural style of supper at a cafe, and it was, well, now would y'all like some dessert? I said, oh, only if you have rhubarb or gooseberry. She said, which one do you want? And that put me in heaven. So yes, indeed, I had one of each, and I said, will you save me a piece for breakfast? And I went back for breakfast the next day and got another piece of rhubarb and another piece of gooseberry pie.
You're a man of my time. I got a comment question for David.
Yes.
You say you're from Kentucky?
Well, no, it was my dad. He's from Kentucky. No, I grew up in the Chicago area. No, I'm not from Kentucky.
Okay, when I'm south of the Ohio River, and we don't have a recipe for it, we're always looking for lemon icebox pie, and maybe one of your viewers could call in with a recipe. I never see it up here. I see it in Kentucky, Tennessee, all the way to Florida.
Huh.
But I love lemon icebox pie, but I never see it up here.
All right. Well, we'll put the call out now. If somebody's got a recipe for lemon icebox pie, call us and share it.
Thank you for the show.
Good.
Well, thanks very much for calling.
Bye.
We are a little bit past our midpoint here. Let me just say very quickly, this is our monthly cooking program. We've been doing this show for a long time with this man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. He's interested in a lot of different things. He's interested in food. He's also interested in the stories that go with food and likes to collect them and collects recipes. And so for a long time, we've been doing the show where we pick some kind of theme and then we just say to people, well, tell us stories. Tell us about this dish. Tell us, do you have a story from your family? Do you have a recipe to share? And this time around, he said he was thinking about pie, and he was particularly thinking about the time when maybe, you know, less than it is the case today, you can't just go down to the store and get whatever you want. So if it was a time when there just wasn't fruit around or you didn't have access to fruit but you wanted to make a pie, well, what did you do? And as he has said, as we have discovered, there are actually a lot of recipes for just those things. And as I said before, essentially it's kind of like something that will make it set and something that will make it sweet, and there you go. You got your pie, and people have a lot of different recipes for those things. And so we said, well, okay, let's talk about that. And particularly if you have, either you have a food memory, that's great, or if you have a recipe to share, that would be great too. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And on we go to someone in Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Two things. One, your best chance for getting gooseberry or rhubarb pie or black raspberry pie is as a rural, a country church social.
Oh,
for
yes.
For sure, someone will have
Will have that, won't they?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because they're homemade.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is when we went down along the Great River Road near Grafton, there's a town called Elsa and a restaurant called Elsa's Landing. And they had black bottom pie, and it was out of this world. But I have no idea what was in it. Did anybody call in with a recipe for black bottom pie?
No, they haven't. And when I was surveying the recipes that I wanted to bring in, I didn't put down black bottom pie, although I came across it. And that's always been a mystery pie to me, black bottom pie, because the pie is that the on top of the bottom crust, you smear melted chocolate.
I figured that was chocolate because I'm
loving yes, chocolate. and then other things would go on top of that, and I believe what that did was that it made a firmer crust and it didn't get mushy, and I believe the black bottom pie came from that. I looked at the recipe yesterday, but I didn't ponder on it. And but yes, there is such a thing, and it exists.
Oh, and it's wonderful. So I hope if anybody out there has the recipe,
oh, that'll be good.
Call in.
Good.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
And let's go on here again to another caller. And the next person up is in McLean County, and line 1.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thank you for talking about pies. And by the way, my husband and I. Our most favorite pie is rhubarb pie.
Rhubarb, yes.
Yes, and we cannot seem to find it anywhere around here. So I just make rhubarb sauce because I'm not a good pie maker.
Well, now you can make a pie very easy if you got the rhubarb, and uh-huh. And it doesn't. Now there are two arguments. One is to cook the rhubarb a little bit, or to not cook it, and that it goes in two different directions.
Uh-huh.
I think that maybe a little quick cooking, not more than 4 or 5 minutes, would soften the rhubarb and make it collapse more into a pie sauce that you would like to have.
What would you cook it in when you cook that 4 or 5 minutes?
Oh, just a saucepan.
Oh, just
and
rhubarb?
And very. I'll tell you what, you get the rhubarb, cut it, and take some of the red off of the ribs. Don't ever have any of the leaves of the rhubarb,
right,
because they're poisonous.
Yeah.
And you might wash it in water and then not dry it. Don't fluff it dry.
Okay.
And just the little bit of water that is lying on the rhubarb after washing it would be enough to, because it's very moist and liquid anyway. And you just want to break that fiber down just a little bit so it's a little bit softer, and you can make a nice pie out of that.
Okay. Now, let me ask you a question just in general. So since instead of making pies, I cheat. I go buy some pies. I can't remember which brand, but there's a brand we really like. And the question was, how do you make sure that the bottom gets cooked properly so it's not soggy, that it's crispy? Is there a way to do that?
There is a way of doing that. One is whether you choose a glass-bottomed pie tin, or if you set it on a, you could set it on a like, well, a pizza stone is too much. You don't need it. You don't need to get that hot, but you need something that will get hot to begin with. I believe you start the pie a little higher up in the oven so that there is a convection current of warmth going under the pie so that it cooks. And there is a time, sometimes you will take a pie out and put it on the bottom shelf so it is down much, much lower after you've cooked it a little bit. And that'll keep it from getting from staying soggy. There is a trick. There is a trick to it, and everyone seems to be coming up with new thoughts. But I believe cooking it in the lower third of your oven would be the answer to keeping the pie crust.
Okay, lower third of the oven.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and start off the high, and then drop the temperature down to normal.
No. Keep the temperature the same. In fact, you might. Pies want to be cooked a little bit higher. 4 1/4 is not too much to cook. A good apple pie wants to be cooked at 4 1/4, not 350. It's that long, slow cooking that you're doing that is keeping it soggy. You want to get it crisp and hot real fast.
Right. Okay. I get that. Great. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Sure.
And you know what I would love to do is to find out any place like in Bloomington, Normal, Champaign.
Yes.
Any of those bigger cities where anybody makes those pies. Because Decatur, there's a place in Decatur that I used to, but they closed years ago. So it's really hard to find someone, you know, who makes it for you.
We had a pie shop here not too long ago, but it's gone now.
Yeah, I think it's been gone for a while, I think.
A little while, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Right, thank you. Let us go on and talk next with somebody in Champaign, I think. Yes, line number 2. Hello.
Hi there. What is shoe fly pie and apple pan dowdy?
Oh.
It must be good because your eyes light up and your tummy
says howdy. You're absolutely right. That was another one. It's just a little bit off of the subject that I was poking around at. Shoe fly pie and apple pan dowdy are two southern tastes. You can easily confuse them with other things because they aren't that special. I don't think I got the recipe for shoe fly pie, although I did look at it. I've got a couple of recipes I want to give here because they're so funny. Shoe fly pie, it's simpler than you think. You'll find it in a southern cookbook. I'm not certain. I don't have it here. Got the vinegar pie, and I'm not certain why it was called that because I've read a lot of arguments about that sort of thing. But those are two southern tastes and. A dowdy is another one of those obscure cobbler type of apple dishes. So it would be very much like an apple cobbler. The apple pan dowdy is, and I don't. It probably has a secret way of putting a crust on it, which is what makes it totally different. But yes, I remember that song quite well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Sorry, I don't have that information, but I did look at it, and it does exist.
Well, and here again, so I'm looking at Wiki, and they say about the shoe fly pie is that it's similar to the chess pie, although it uses molasses.
Molasses, okay. Yes, molasses instead of corn syrup.
And there is, I do see, they do have a link to a recipe. I won't do it all, but if somebody has internet access, they can get it. And this apparently it's a Pennsylvania German kind of a deal. Okay. Well, again, if people If people have internet access, they can. I'm sure they can.
We can
spend
hours,
all day.
We can
looking
spend
at
hours
recipes.
On
yeah.
the internet. I love it.
Exactly.
I love it.
Let's see. Let's talk with somebody in Mahomet, line number 3. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, they have shoe fly pie in Arthur, the Amish restaurant.
Oh yes,
serves it. But that's not why I was calling. My mother-in-law from Texas, always who herself is a wonderful cook, always told this story I always thought was sweet about her mother-in-law who made this chocolate pie that was the best chocolate pie she ever had. And she tried to, and her mother-in-law was a little ornery and wouldn't give her the recipe.
Oh,
and
yes.
So my mother-in-law experimented and tried and tried and tried, and hers just wouldn't come out the same way. And finally it occurred to her that her mother-in-law lived way down in South Texas, and she was 103 when she died, and that was 10 years ago. So that tells you how far back there
was. That's right.
Refrigeration, there wasn't, you know. And so she had used canned milk.
Oh, yes, okay.
And that's what my mother-in-law finally figured out.
Evaporated milk, yes.
And, yes, and that was the only milk they had then.
But that's true.
I thought that was a sweet story, though.
It is, and that would give a different texture to it. And my mother made chocolate pies for me.
Uh-huh.
She made cherry pies for my brother, and then she asked me what kind of pie I wanted, and I said, well, I wanted a cherry pie, too. No, I can't have it because that's my brother's pie. What do you want? So I chose chocolate, and her chocolate pies were always delicious, but they're hard to make because they're not exciting because I didn't like the cornstarch. And finally, I found a chocolate mixture that I did like, and it's Italian. So,
oh, is that right? Is it canned milk?
No, no. It uses ricotta cheese.
Wow.
Yes.
That sounds good.
Yes, you're right. Ricotta cheese and melted chocolate.
Oh, wonderful.
Mm, it's good.
Well, I just always loved that story that she told and how proud she was when she finally figured out that they were so far south that they didn't have refrigerators.
Well, I was pondering on that the other day myself. I don't know why. I mean, this is just zeitgeist, the time spirit. We're thinking of it.
Uh-huh.
I was thinking about my uses of evaporated milk because often we didn't – well, we had milk delivered, but I can't recall it being an issue, but we often had canned milk. Daddy would use it in his coffee, and I would gag and use it on my cereal. I didn't really like it, but I remember we had it so much, and I remember not liking it so much. But
right.
it was an availability, and of course you had to. Number one, you had an ice box. You didn't have a refrigerator
right, exactly.
yet. And you had an ice pick. And you made holes in the top of the can with the ice pick. And there was a special way of doing it. You put you poke it in with an ice pick, and you turn the ice pick to the left and the right, and you make a wide slit about a quarter of an inch. And then you put a breathing hole at the other end of the can, and it's just a straight-in hole. And I learned to do that very early
And then it poured.
You had to have two holes.
I don't think it would be so great on cereal, but I think it tastes, you know, and it does have a special, unique taste mixed into. I've got a casserole, for example. That
oh yes,
for it, and it really adds a richness.
Yes, it does, and then I get confused because we have condensed milk, evaporated milk, and no fat skim milk. And then we have the sweetened condensed milk.
Right.
We didn't used to have all that stuff. You had pet milk and carnation, and baby, that was it.
Well, that was enough. There's too many choices.
Well, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. I like it.
Well, anyway, I just wanted to share that.
Yes,
I'm
thank
really
you.
Enjoying this program.
Well, thanks very much for the call. We have about 5-6 minutes left.
Oh, my.
We'll talk next with somebody in Chicago. Line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
When you started the show and you talked about the what do you do when you don't have fruit, my first thought was, well, they're going to talk about mock apple pie.
Ah, yay!
Were you just waiting for somebody?
Yeah. Tell me what you know about mock apple pie.
Lots of crackers.
Yes? How many?
I don't remember.
36.
I just remember eating it more. I've never made it.
36. And were they Ritz crackers?
Yes.
Yes, that is a recipe. Thank you. I'm hot on this one. That's a recipe that came out with the invention of Ritz crackers in 1930, and it was purported to be a pioneer woman's recipe. And now they keep hunting it up after they did the recipe. Let's see. I'm going to read this. It wasn't until some years later I discovered that the recipe, or one very much like it, was invented around 1852 by a group of pioneer women for their children who missed the apple pie that they had back east. And it is in a book called How We Cook in Los Angeles, 1894. But I think all of that is fake. That's what this implies, and it really came from, and they sometimes call it an April Fool cake, but I remember it in the 50s, and it says that there was a return to this to mock apple pie in the 50s right after the war, because again of the difficulty of getting certain pieces of stuff, you know. So mock apple pie is an admitted invention by Nabisco.
Uh-huh.
And that's what it is. However, I do have some other recipes with crackers, and all it is eggs, sugar, and baking powder, and 12 saltines with dates and pecans.
Oh.
And that I think is probably a real old recipe. And then when the Ritz crackers came, I'd known about the Ritz cracker apple pie for years, but I never made one and I never ate one. So does it taste like apple, really?
It really does.
It really does, doesn't it? I got the recipe right here, 36 Ritz crackers, and probably 1 3/4 cups of water, 2 cups of sugar, 2 teaspoons cream of tartar, lemon juice, grated lemon, margarine, and cinnamon. And, I mean, that's not... I mean, isn't that an amazing amount of stuff? And you heat the water and the sugar and cream of tartar, and you pour it and add the lemon juice and the peel. Then you pour that syrup over the cracker crumbs. And you see, I always thought that the crackers were laid in it kind of like apple slices. But they say, no, you want to break them up a little bit, but not too much. And you put a crust on the top, and you put slits in it so the steam escapes, and you cook it at 425 for 35 minutes. And you've got an April Fool pie is one of the names that it was called, but it's mock apple pie. And this is what freaked me out. I'm running out of time. So what really freaked me out is because last night late, I thought, how am I ever going to get the information about that mock apple pie that I've heard so much all my life? And I Googled it, and there were 2,100 hits. And so just Google mock apple pie, and you'll get everything you want to know about apple pie, mock apple pie.
Well, that's great. You won't get the recipe for rhubarb pie.
No, you won't get that.
Well, the rhubarb pie that a friend talked about, a newlywed, was looking to, she'd never cooked, and her husband brought home a stalk of rhubarb and said, can you make a pie out of this? He came home from work, and she brought out this long thing wrapped in pie dough. And he said, what's that? And she said, well, you gave me the rhubarb, and that's the rhubarb pie.
That's the rhubarb pie. Oh, that's good. I like that one. That boy, talk about naive. That's naive cooking. Well, I like
thank
it.
Thank you for your show.
All yes. Right,
thanks for the call.
Bye.
We have time for maybe at least one more call. Maybe more. We'll go first in line here, Champagne, and line number two. Hello.
Hey. My mother was English, and she used to have pie towers, a ceramic thing that would be put in a big pie dish. And I think they were a replacement for poking holes in the roof of a pie.
Did she have the ones in the shape of a blackbird?
No, they were more like
a cone.
A cone, yes.
Yeah, a truncated cone. That's called a pie bird, and it's very popular English. And I asked. I asked one of my friends who was going to England at Christmas time, please bring me a pie bird so that I can have one. He says, you get them any place. He says, you can get them here, you can get them on the internet or whatever. I said, no, they're English, and I want a pie bird from England. He got the pie bird. He brought it back, and it had a Made in USA stamp on it. But I've got a pie bird, and he also brought me back a cone. And so and Alton Brown just used it last week on his making of the apple pie. And what it does is it reduces it allows the steam to escape, and so that the pie crust doesn't weep and break and but you got this little bird with his mouth open standing up in the middle of the pie.
Ah.
It's called a pie bird. But you're absolutely right. Thank you for bringing that information.
I know where the pies go. Where the pies go at Christmas time, they're raisins and they go into pies.
Oh,
another song.
Oh, okay.
And I think the two-sided pie may have come because Americans like to have pieces of pie.
Well,
they hold them on both sides.
I guess you're right. They aren't scooped out with a spoon and slopped into the bottom of a dish there. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And I think we're just about the point. We're going to have to stop. And
I don't
want to
stop. I'm going.
All things must pass, my friend. For the moment, we'll see if we can get some of these recipes on our website so that you can go there. I think that the recipes are still on the old website to go to will.uiuc.edu. AM Focus 580 links, and there are a lot of recipes there, and we'll see if we can get them on there fairly quickly. And then next month, Doyle will be back, and we'll do it again. Hey, thanks very much.
I'll say...